talked to me this morning, in fact, a couple of people did, and they said they never really saw that before. Well, if you were living back then, you'd be quite familiar with what's going on here. And this is why it's so exciting to see God in action, how God feels, number one, against false gods and idolatry, and number two, exactly how far man is willing to take it. Things we have going on in our society today, give it a little time, don't make it into a religion. You're going to find a lot of things are on the verge of becoming a religion if they're not already. Because a religion is that which consumes one's time and one's wallet. And you'll find out there's a lot of religions going on. The big one, humanism. This morning we covered two of those gods. We covered the Nile god, which was the number two god in all of Egypt, Hapi. And we covered Hec, the frog-headed goddess. We're going to cover number 3, 4, 5, and 6. Next week we'll cover to the end of 10. The next one on deck is found in Exodus chapter 8, verse 16 and 17. Open your text up to that. Exodus 8, verse 16 and 17. It's the plague of lice. The scriptures say, beginning in verse 16, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth that it may become gnats throughout all the land of Egypt.' And they did so. And Aaron stretched out his hand with his staff and struck the dust of the earth. And there were gnats on man and beast, and the dust of the earth became gnats throughout all the land of Egypt." What we have to understand here is that with a wave of this staff, you have these gnats all over the place. And they come from the ground, and there's much discussion over the years as to what are these bugs. Well, there's a general consensus it was lice, because if you look at it in the Septuagint, which is the Greek version of the Old Testament combined with the New Testament, the word used there is evidently makes it apparent that it is lice. The word for it is kinum, referring to an insect that attaches on or under the skin. And you may not know this, but in a lot of the movies on Egyptians, have you noticed they're like bald, or you never see like a big bearded Egyptian, typically. Because they were lice-phobic people. They hated lice. And we have to understand that they hated lice so much that they actually shaved every day and wore a one-piece tunic to cover the body, because they didn't want any lice on them. Lice had become a problem. That's why they didn't like the Hyksos kings, the shepherd kings, which Joseph would have been one of those. The Israelites are a hairy people, but the Egyptians, they kept themselves cleanly shaved. I would have liked to own Norelco stock or something there, because they shaved both men and women every single day. And notice that it was the ground that Aaron struck with his staff. This would be the location where the third plague originated. In fact, the text states that, quote, "all the dust of the earth became gnats throughout all the land of Egypt." Now, there are modern-day stories about areas of Egypt that have such large outbreaks of camel ticks that it said, quote, "the ground literally moves." And those dry, arid areas, when they might get some moisture, certain conditions take place, massive amounts of insects will come forth. Well, one of the primary gods of worship for the Egyptians was a god named Geb. Geb was the earth god to them. And according to Heliopolis doctrine, he came from the line of important gods. His parents were Shu, the god of the air, and his supposed mother was Tefnut, which was goddess of moisture. And Geb is usually presented in the form of a man wearing a white crown with a goose on it. I might have a little picture there from some drawings. Why did you choose the goose, I wonder, Gab? Because that's what was holy to him. I wouldn't trust a God that had a goose on his head. But they did. They had a great respect for Gab. They considered his laughter the cause of earthquakes. When they felt the ground tremble, they said that it was Gab laughing, and they thought that he was pleased at that point. They believed that the earth formed his body, and that the earth itself considered the house of Gab the same way the house of Shu was the sky, and the house of Ra, the sun god, was the house of the heavens. And they called the heavens the house of Ra. And so when you talked about the ground, you said, this is the house of Geb you're standing on. They worshipped Geb with all their heart. He's often portrayed in hieroglyphics as laying down on the ground, like inviting people to come and lay on his turf, so to speak. Ancient hymns and compositions played a very important role in the Book of the Dead. He's viewed as the one who kept the wicked trapped to the earth, and he would release the righteous to the heavens. The Egyptian magicians tried to bring forth the same, tried to say, here's some dirt, let's bring forth some lice. They couldn't do it. And notice what they said in 8:19. They said, this is the finger of God. This is the finger of Jehovah. This is significant because of what what was taught about Geb. Geb apparently had some run-ins with some of the other gods. One of the gods' name was Set or Seth, but they usually called him Set. And Set was the troublemaker god of the upper desert areas, where if there was a big windstorm that blew in, a big dust storm, some chaos that went on, they'd say, this is the finger of Set. And you just had to take it how it came. Well, they're now saying, whoa, 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 we can't do this. This is some powerful stuff. This is the finger of Jehovah, their God. Now, when magicians are impressed, like Simon the Sorcerer and Janus and Jambres, which are probably these two magicians, when they recognize God as powerful, you think Pharaoh would listen, but he doesn't. And this plague of lice was also against the Egyptian priesthood themselves, because it was against the religion itself in Egypt for a priest to have lice. He could not even carry out his priestly duties. God shut down the religious system by drowning them with lice. Now, I got to tell you, I had one encounter with lice. I never had it. Okay? I'm clean. No. But Janet knows what I'm talking about. When we were down at Sunset, there was like all the toddlers. There was like, I think God was practicing up on the kids there or something. But Abby brought home an infestation of lice. It was it was going around. They sent a note. It was already too late. I remember being at Sunset, and I get this call from Janet. She says, you got to come home. You know, and so I went. I said, what's going on? She says, Abby has lice. And apparently Jenna went to wash Abby's head, and she went to put shampoo, and these things went running across her hand. She went, ah! Like that. She was scrubbing Abby's head. We shaved Abby. She had no friends that cared, really. No, but she was like two. We got a picture of her. Somebody saw it one day and said, she's two here? Why is she bald? We were not going to fight that war. That was terrifying. Now imagine if the ground god you're worshiping, every time you walked on the ground, you said, oh, I love Geb. Geb is nice. I like him. They when they dig dirt to plant, they'd hold up soil and they'd honor Geb with it. Now they're going, ah, they're running from it. They can't get away from Geb. You ever try to go somewhere where there's no land? It's hard. It really is. At best, you can jump, maybe stay up a quarter of a second. But you're coming back down into the hands of lice-infected Geb, who is now unclean. It's almost as if God is saying that it's not Geb who's master over the earth. It's me, Jehovah. I'm master. It's not Geb who causes the earth to quake, but it's me. It's Jehovah. Psalm 8 verse 1 tells us that Jehovah is greater than Gab. He says, O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is thy name in all the earth, who displayed thy splendor above the heavens. In Genesis 1 verse 1, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It wasn't Gab who brought forth this ground. Psalm 18 verse 7, the earth shook and quaked. The foundation of the mountains were trembling, were shaken because he was angry. It's because God is angry, not because Gab is laughing. 24 verse 1, a psalm says, the earth is the Lord's and all that contains, the world and all those who dwell in it. Jehovah is far greater than Gab. But God wasn't done yet. Pharaoh didn't learn a lesson. Now, he is done with the children of Israel. They get the point. God didn't send any more to them. He did make it optional to get out of these. There's the plague of insects, 8 verse 24 of Exodus. And then the Lord did so, and there came great swarms of insects into the house of Pharaoh and the houses of the servants. Land was laid waste because of the swarms of insects in all the land of Egypt. You know, Pharaoh was still refusing to let the Israelites leave, and so God had Moses meet Pharaoh again early one morning, and Moses told Pharaoh that he would be bringing flies on all the land of Egypt. And this entire land of Egypt would be filled with flies except where the Israelites lived. Now, the fourth plague was to come upon the people. It was swarming insects, not flies. A few versions actually add the word flies. NAS does that. But that's not what is what the Hebrew text says. The word for swarms can mean all kinds of or a mixture. That's really what it means. Psalm 78 verse 45 told us that divers or various sorts came upon them. It means all kinds of flies. Probably the dog fly. You ever been bit by like a dog fly before? They hurt. I mean, you'll be just talking to somebody and just go, what is that? And you can't ever smack those things. If you do, you got to take a bath. You know, because they're huge. We call them sand flies sometimes when we're in Nebraska. There's all kinds of things. The bite usually swells and hurts. The horse fly would be included. That's a painful bite. It's very probable that there was a beetle included in for the fly. The ancient historian Josephus says that they were also included. Well, there was a god that you need to know about. His name is Keheperah. And Keheperah is the god of resurrection. This was a plague aimed at the Egyptian god Keheperah. And the reason why is they believed critters that could fly, including the scarab. That was the biggie. The scarab, they believed that, you know, flies and insects usually lay eggs on dead things. It's like when Azariah falls down through the lattice in 2 Kings chapter 1, and you find out that they said Beelzebul. You know, we worship Beelzebul, which means Lord of the Flies, because they believe flies, you know, laid, when they saw life come out of something dead, they didn't understand the maggot concept. When they saw something alive come out of something dead, they were convinced that was the taking of your soul. So they viewed flies as a good thing. And so when they looked at Gab, who was represented as a beetle-headed human, or the scarab beetle itself, they really honored that. Now, the scarab beetle also tends to lay its eggs in carcasses, and so when they would see these scarab beetles come out of a carcass of an animal, they'd say, oh, well, that's good, because if life is coming out of death, well, then that's a good thing. This plague, though, was also against the other part of the Egyptians' beliefs. They believe not only were the flies involved in that, but they believe Keheperah was the god that issued these very things. And the Book of the Dead, it gives honor to the bird fly who was supposed to be able to bring a man to heaven. The flies would also make the Egyptians impure for their religious services, though. Their flies were good, but they weren't good on you. Now they have a problem, though. Oh, by the way, something interesting about the scarab. They refer to it as a dung beetle, too. You ever see that beetle on National Geographic? I like that show every now and then. You know, I remember seeing that, the dung beetle, and they start talking about this. He gets a ball of dung and he rolls it all around the place for food. You know, it's a pretty active little bug. Well, this scarab is what was on Caiaphas' face. You can't really see it there, but that he was a man with a face of a scarab. Okay? And what do you think these scarab beetle fly worshiping Egyptians were thinking when these insects started swarming around them? See, a little flies were okay. But now you got swarming insects all over the place. They couldn't get far enough from Caiaphas. They could not begin to call out on Caiaphas' name. In fact, Caiaphas was the big god for deliverance because death was the one that you wanted Caiaphas to deal with. And now they're looking at these beetles and bugs and flies and critters flying around. I mean, they're all over the place. They probably could not even tolerate another beetle. Well, guess what? Jehovah's greater than Caiaphas. John chapter 11, verse 25 and 26, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me shall live even if he dies. It's not Caiaphas who's in charge of that. It's God through Christ who's in charge of the resurrection. 1 Peter 1 verse 3 says, Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his great mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope. How? Through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Romans 8 verse 11, But the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you. He who raised Jesus from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through the spirit that indwells in you. It is God, Jehovah, who is far greater than Caiaphas. But let me move on for the sake of time. The fifth plague, the pestilence on cattle. In 9 verses 2 through 6, if you refuse to let them go and continue to hold them, behold, the hand of the Lord will come with a very severe pestilence on your livestock, which are in the field. On the horses, on the donkeys, on the camels, on the herds, and on the flocks. But the Lord will make a distinction between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt, so that nothing will die that belongs to the sons of Israel. And the Lord set a definite time, saying, Tomorrow the Lord will do this thing in the land. So the Lord did this thing on the morrow, and all the livestock of Egypt died. But the livestock of the sons of Israel, not one died. Pharaoh, he was a stiff neck. He still didn't learn. You can almost see God, you know, picking these guys off, pull, boom, and just shooting them down. No matter who they call out to, it's not going to work. You call it out, I'll take it down, God is saying. Well, Pharaoh, the old stiff neck, it's time to get a fifth plague. But now they should be calling out to a new god. It was a devastating time since the Egyptians were heavily dependent upon livestock, not only for milking and consumption, but also for clothing. And to have all their supply wiped out puts them in a great danger. Well, there's a god called Ptah. And Ptah is their god of creation. And though the Egyptians had many gods in their system, the one that stood out above all concerning his creating ability was Ptah. And he was the chief god of the city of Memphis, and he was viewed as the creator who brought all things into being by his thoughts. He would think it with his mind and say it with his name, and it would form. He was the supreme creator. And he was unique among the creation gods because his methods were intellectual and not physical. And according to the ancient writings of Memphis, not Tennessee, but Egypt, everything in the universe was a result, it says, quote, the result of Ptah's heart and tongue. Gods are born, towns are founded, and order is maintained, is what they used to say. Now, Ptah was the patron god with skilled craftsmen and architects. If you were like an architect, that was your main god that you had, because he was smart. You know, he got his degree. And so what happened was, this craftsman, as a craftsman, Ptah, that's what he was, because he made all this, supposedly. Well, he carved divine bodies of the royalty. See, Pharaoh didn't come from the same potter's wheel that we did at the hand of Gib. Pharaoh was made especially by Ptah. Well, he's depicted as a bearded man wearing a skull cap and shrouded as a mummy. His hands emerged from the wrappings in front of his body, and that's where he holds the scepter. That's actually a picture of him from carved hieroglyphics. And that brings us to the Apis bull up there on the left. He was the living incarnation of Ptah. The Egyptians believed that the Apis bull was the result of a relationship between Ptah and a virgin cow. Apparently he mated with a virgin cow, and this Apis bull was born. Okay, bestiality was going well in Egypt. The Apis, now the bull would roam around wherever he wanted to in the temple grounds. He was constantly watched daily. They'd watch how he'd walk. He's walking this way today. They said the way he walked, the way he ate, the way he acted, they used as prophecy. They'd chart down every single move. There were people who made their living following the bull around, saying, today he smacked the flies this way. And they felt that if they could figure out his code, then they could predict the future. In fact, they even brought the sick to him to have the Apis bull breathe on them, because they believed he had divine powers. The Apis bull could be identified by the priest of Memphis. They typically, when one would die, they'd have to go out and find out where the soul of this Apis bull went to. They'd search all the land, find a diamond-shaped mark on the neck, a lump on his tongue in the shape of a scarab. It was kind of documented that they used to kind of burn the cow's tongue. Say, oh, look at this. Here's a scarab-shaped burn mark on there, naturally formed. He was given special food, bathed, and brushed daily. He even wore special clothes. He had Apis bull suits. Now, when Apis bull died, he was mummified and buried second only to extraordinary funerals to the Pharaoh. They've unearthed some of these Apis tombs, and they found out you could not bury one for less than $100,000. That's what they did. And that was back in their conversion. If you worked it up, it was like be like $1 million burial today to bury a cow. Bull, actually. And it was this religion that the people of Israel reverted to when Moses was up on Mount Sinai. You see, it means a lot more when you find out they make this bronze calf. They want to make this golden calf and worship it because they were scared. Everybody in Egypt worshipped the bull god. All of them did. Now, you remember when Moses went up on Mount Sinai, this wasn't like 30 years later. This was 50 days later. They had just passed through. They saw this, and they started falling back to their old ways. They were being carried away. And that's why God had to confront them. Now, this was the God and guardian of the flocks and herds of Egypt. And it appeared that the Apis bull did not do well in protecting the flock that day, did he? It was possible and probable the Apis bull himself died in this plague. And with most of the cattle ending up dead, it'd be kind of hard to find a replacement for your bull god. In fact, very few bulls would have been found in the land because they would have to import new cattle, and then it'd be a number of years before they would have some selections to make. God crippled Apis, the bull god. With no Apis bull present, the Egyptian god, Ptah, would be very, very weak because his own incarnation could not exist on the earth. Just as God predicted, all the livestock grew sick and died. The Egyptians would have to carry on their own loads for a while. Who are they going to get to carry their loads? They don't have their livestock anymore. If they're hungry, they're going to have to go buy food from people who do have it. Well, I know some Israelites that didn't get damaged in it. I'm sure some people cast in some gold around that time. And you know, when the kettle died, the Egyptians, they lost a huge amount of wealth. Not to mention they had all these dead carcasses around. Ptah was supposed to be the creator god, and now he's reduced down to the god of uselessness. This god was supposed to be overlooking the cattle. And now all the cattle are dead. You think the Egyptians are proud of Ptah at this time? You think they're doubting this god a little bit? Ptah is not the creator who spoke things into existence. That's Jehovah. The incarnation is not over the flocks and the herds, but it's Jehovah. It's God who says he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Psalm 50, verse 10. In 1 verse 24 of Genesis, it's God that brought forth the cattle. We know in Hebrews 9, verse 13 and 14, that really the blood of bulls and goats don't accomplish anything. That's why he had to send Jesus. Don't say that God is not the God over the issue of the cattle and the God over the issue of creation, because he is. You know, whenever you put anything on the backdrop of the real God, really they don't add up to much. They don't. And let's cover one last one, the plague of boils. In Exodus 9, verse 8 through 10, then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, take for yourself handfuls of soot from the kiln, and let Moses throw it toward the sky in the sight of Pharaoh, and it will become fine dust over all the land of Egypt. And it will become boils breaking out with sores on a man and beast throughout the land of Egypt. And so they took soot from the kiln and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses threw it toward the sky, and it became boils breaking out with sores on man and beast. You know, Pharaoh, he's just not learning. Hence, we're going to give you some boils, God says. And Moses grabbed some of this ash from the kiln, launched into the air. It spread throughout, and pretty soon, all these Egyptians and whatever beasts are left are covered in boils. Now, I don't know about you. I had a boil one time. I like to keep it one time. They're no fun at all. You know, if you've ever had one, it's like a zit on steroids. It is. They're bad. And now all these Egyptians, looks like they're getting a little sample of Job. Well, there was a god named Thoth. He's actually pronounced T-H-O-T-H, but he's pronounced Thoth, but spelled with a T-H. H is silent. The Egyptians worshiped this god. He's the god of science and health. He was the medicine man in the sky. He was a man who had the head of an ibis. He often was seen wearing a lunar disc and crescent on his head of the Atef crown. The red bulls and very rarely even humans were sacrificed and burned on his grate. They were literally burned alive to honor this. You don't tell me they weren't serious about this. When you take a human being and you just fry him up in honor of this god, they believe something. Sacrifice was given. That sacrifice that was given was named Typhos. And the ashes from the burnt sacrifice were taken from by the priest and thrown into the air. And the Egyptians actually believed if any of this ash fell on you, the person would be saved from any defilement. This was an actual ritual that they did to Thoth. And Moses and Aaron did not take the ashes from the furnace of Typhon. They didn't do it. They took it from the kiln. And the word for kiln, it's actually one that is a specific kiln. It's from the brick kiln where they had to make bricks for Pharaoh. And so God says, reach in there. Reach into the kiln of slavery. Now throw some ash into the air. God was showing the Egyptians, and particularly Pharaoh, that Typhon was powerless. That sacrifice. He was showing them that simple ashes from a slave's furnace with the power of the true God is more powerful than any sacrifice ever made to Thoth. He was regarded as a powerful God. But today, while they all have boils and they're hurt, It looks like the sacrifice backfired. Bad sores would again make the Egyptian priest unclean for religious services. You know, the Egyptian church is having a rough month about this time. And this is also a way to show God's power against Imhotep, their god of learning and medicine. He was actually one of the few gods that was a real person in history. They figured when he died, we'll make him a god. He was a good guy. And he'd been a wise man and architect for many years before the years of Moses. He was regarded highly. Therefore, the Egyptians believed he became a god. And they actually attributed powers of medicinal to him. Well, guess what? Your Blue Cross Blue Shield plan in the days of Egypt did not help you anymore. That was their insurance plan. You would go to the Egyptian priest and they'd throw the ashes from the sacrifice of a burned body or an animal to try to protect you from anything that's evil. And now, they're literally finding now, Thoth is not that powerful. It's not Thoth who's the great physician, but Jehovah. It's not Thoth that heals thee, but that's Jehovah. Jehovah is greater than Thoth, is the message. Psalm 103, verse 3, who pardons all your iniquity and heals all your diseases. That's Jehovah. That's not Thoth. Psalm 147, verse 3, he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. That's Jehovah. That is not Imhotep. Exodus 15, 26 says, if you will give earnest heed to the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all the statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I have put on the Egyptians. For I, the Jehovah, that's what that word is, am your healer. You know what? They've had four centuries to be desensitized away from God. There were 70 of them that went in with Jacob into Egypt. 400 years have elapsed, and they have forgotten the Lord their God. They forgot the Jehovah. I think they may begin to turn when they see all these other gods pay the price. So I leave you with this challenge this week. Go back and read through the book of Exodus. Go back and read this with the information that you know now. If you didn't enjoy it a lot before, you're going to enjoy it a lot more. And if you enjoyed it a bunch, go back and watch the show that nobody missed. The day and the month and the year that God shot down all the gods of Egypt. He committed war against them. And once you do that, then pray to God and tell him you know how awesome he is. God is always going to be first, whether or not you recognize it. You might as well do it for Christ. Don't audit salvation. Give God the glory. Give him the credit of taking down Egypt in the best possible way. If you need to respond to the invitation, why don't you do so while we stand and sing right now?